Welcome back. You're listening to Backchat this Tuesday morning with Ada Wong and me, Hugh Tewerton. We were talking about cross-strait relations in the first part of the programme. Today we wanted to turn to a Hong Kong issue between now and 9.30. David Webb has joined us in our central studio. We're looking at a decision by the administration to alter the rules on inspection arrangements for the company's register. There's been a lot of criticism over this. Some personal information about directors on the company's register would be no longer available under these proposals. We'll be talking to David Webb about the rights and wrongs of that. We want to hear from you as well, of course. You can email backchat@rthk.hk. You can call us on 233-88-266, or you can go to our Facebook page and comment there. That's Backchat and RTHK Radio 3. Just before we get to that, as promised, some comments on other issues, COVID-related, and I think in particular there's new suggestions that came from the chief executive yesterday on the need for vaccinations and the benefits given to people with vaccinations have caught the imagination of our listeners. I think we'll do it as a full topic tomorrow. But a few preliminary thoughts. Alison says, I think the government's proposal to relax COVID restrictions for restaurants and bars, providing their staff have been vaccinated, makes sense. But here's my question. Can restaurant or bar owners effectively force their staff to take the vaccine by, for example, threatening them with dismissal for non-compliance? Perhaps one of your guests or listeners can shed light on this. Thanks. That's from Alison. John says, I am absolutely shocked. Here we are. Welcome to dictatorship. CE mentions that relaxation of opening hours of restaurants, as well as the number of people allowed to seat in a table, is related to the staff of the restaurant being fully vaccinated, as well as patrons to have received at least the first shot. I'm absolutely shocked and disgusted. If I do work in a restaurant and I won't get vaccinated, the restaurant can't obtain the advantages, so I will be terminated? As a patron, if I'm not vaccinated, I can't enter a restaurant and have dinner? Is this legal or is it against basic law to restrict freedom of choice and movement? Can a law expert give an answer? That's from John. And Jay says, in other words, if you don't get vaccinated, you don't have a job and this will spread. And Robin says this was in relation to a discussion about reliable sources. Thanks for the correction. Apologies to New Delhi TV. While I'm at it, I could make my own recommendation for more balanced info on COVID in China. I would point to the recent Sinica podcast episode called China's COVID-19 Response and the Virus's Origins with Deborah Seligson. Great stuff from Sinica. They and Backchat are my main go-tos for Hong Kong and China audio discussion. That is from Robin. And Bernadette says has attaches some info from the Daily Mail. That's a story about the controversy over the, which is slightly confusing, I've got to say, over the efficacy of the Sinovac vaccine and what was said and what was reported wrong. As I say, we'll turn to that in full tomorrow. David Webb, first of all, good morning to you.
Morning.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us once again. So basically what we're talking about, as I say, is changing the inspection arrangements for the company register, implementing a new inspection regime, which will restrict the amount of personal information that's given about company directors. Why are you concerned about this?
Well, we went through this argument in 2012 to 2013, and we won, basically. The government withdrew the proposed subsidiary legislation that they wanted to table to allow blanking out part of the ID numbers and also allowing directors to use a non-residential address for public display. At the time, the people opposed to it, not just myself and other investors, but also business professionals involved in due diligence, anti-money laundering, know-your-client kind of business, sponsors of IPOs, small and medium enterprises looking at their customers and suppliers and thinking about their credit risks and wanting to know whether the company they're dealing with is run by an individual who's got a trail of corporate bankruptcies behind him. And a journalist association and foreign correspondents club and others were all opposed to it. And actually, the government withdrew it because they realised that there was enough opposition from the business sector in LegCo that it wouldn't be allowed to stand. Now it's back, You know, nothing has changed about the principles involved. The opposition is still there, perhaps not in LegCo, but from the media and others who use the registries for proper purposes to obtain information. They will find it harder to uncover wrongdoing, fraud, corruption and so forth, to investigate the assets of families of state officials, for example, which they have used it for that purpose in the past. The government has done nothing to address that. Now, I think these registers should be fully open without a paywall. That's what's happened in the UK, New Zealand, Denmark, many other places, where you don't even have to pay, because although there is a minor cost of putting the servers online, they've already digitized the records anyway, and the greater public good is served by the transparency involved. I mean, it costs money to maintain public parks, but you are not charged when you walk in them, and this is on a similar level of public good. The proposal is in two parts. I have some sympathy with not having to disclose your residential address, particularly because of personal security reasons. My residential address is in the register if you look hard enough. I don't think that journalists necessarily would want their residential addresses on a register of journalists. They might be happier if it was their business address.
And I understand in the UK that you don't have to give the personal address.
That is correct. It does make it harder to distinguish individuals, of course, because thousands of companies can be based in a letterbox address, basically a company secretary office, where actually the directors are never present. Mm. They just deal with it by mail, and they might live outside Hong Kong. I think that part of the proposal one could live with if we could be certain about which individuals we're looking at. And you can't be certain without the full identity number or passport number of the people involved. And to be able to take that number and then look it up using other registers, such as the LAN register. Or to take another example, the vehicle licensing register. As you know, one of your colleagues is currently being prosecuted for looking up a vehicle license owner when trying to report on the Yuen Long attacks of 21st July 2019. And, if you were able to ascertain the full ID number, which you currently can, then you're able then to look up whether they are directors of companies, whether they own land, whether they're involved in the small house trading that goes on up in the new territories, and so on.
Okay. So there's lots of issues there. So what the government says is that they will. So there will be that under this plan, there will be a personal correspondence address. It may not be the residential where your home is, but there will be a personal address, and there will be partial identification numbers. There will be the start of your ID card, basically, or three digits from your ID card. They say that's enough to identify someone.
Well, it's not.
Those two pieces of information that should be sufficient to enable searches to ascertain the identity of the director concerned. So they will be able to work it out. But you say not.
No.
No, David, you have done a test.
I've done a test.
I read your website reports.
Yes, Ada. So look, I did a simple test, right? I said, let's prove how easy it is to find collisions in the identity codes if you blank out three of the digits, which the company's registry does on its...
With the same address?
The address is...
You triangulate with the address.
You can't get the addresses simply by searching on the director's name. You have to drill down multiple levels and pull documents and pay every time you get a document before you can even read one of those documents and look at their address. And if it's now allowed to be a secretarial address, which could house tens of thousands of companies, then that's not going to help you. So I searched for Chan Chi Kung, which your listeners may recognize as a common name in Hong Kong. They probably know somebody called Chan Chi Kung, and it's almost certainly not the same person that another listener knows. There are thousands of them, and hundreds of them have been company directors. There are, in my results of that search, It came up with 245 records, of which 217 had unique ID numbers. But when you mask them with masking the three digits that the registry currently does, and you can see the results on website.com, then I found eight pairs that look the same, but are in fact different people with different ID numbers underneath. And in fact, in two of those pairs, they only differed by not three digits, but two digits. So if you had unmasked the next digit, you might not have got the right person. And, you know, there's a reason why they're called identity numbers. It's that they're only identical if you have the whole number. You have a unique number that nobody else has. That's the purpose. It's not a password. It's not a secret. I published my ID number years and years ago in the first round of this battle to make the point. I've not suffered any consequences from publishing my ID number. It's still on my website. If you go to About Us, you can look it up. You know, the government actually should publish a complete list of ID numbers and names, nothing more than that, just names and corresponding ID numbers, and use those whenever they appoint somebody to a committee, for example. If a Chan Shih-kung gets appointed to a committee these days, I have no idea who it is. And it could be somebody appointed to, for example, the District Fight Crime Committee, and is now going to be a voter in the election committee. You know, these
quite
people,
likely, yes.
You know, there are, you know, hundreds of nobodies on these committees, and the government names people but doesn't tell you who they really are.
Okay. What the government says is that things have changed. You mentioned that earlier consultation and the one in 2009. The government statement says, in recent years, there's been a rising community concern over whether personal information contained in public registers are adequately protected, especially in the light of increased reported cases of doxing and personal data misuse. And it quotes the Office of the Privacy Commissioner for Personal Data, saying that the government has to implement the previous proposal to limit the disclosure of identification numbers and residential addresses, because that was a consideration in 2019. Do you think things have changed? I mean, I know you're strongly on one side.
Well, they haven't demonstrated what harm can come from knowing somebody's ID number. Okay, what harm has come to me from the public having full access on my website to my ID number, or to anyone else in the company's registry?
So you accept about the addresses?
I have sympathy with it, and if they're going to, as long as they keep the full
because
ID
number.
Because
you can just give a correspondence address. As I say, they do it in other places.
Yes.
You just give an address.
Right, and if you can't contact somebody through that address, then you can go to court. But, you know, so I've got sympathy with that part.
Yeah, okay. What about the protection of personal data?
But the ID
is that
number,
an issue to you, protection of personal data?
The ID number on its own only gives you access to other public registers of public information. When you set up a company and become a director, you are granted great privileges. You are allowed to trade with limited liability. That means that if the company goes bust, you're not liable for its debts. And with that privilege comes responsibility of being known to anyone who might have an interest in dealing with you, either through that company or through other companies that you control and direct. And so that's the principle of transparency adopted in open registers elsewhere. And whether it's land and researching the illegal structures and subdivided properties owned by officials and their wives, for example, or whether it's some other issue, the public and the media, the Fourth Estate, should have access to that information. And there has not been shown that there's any great harm from knowing information. Information doesn't hurt people. There are laws against doing illegal things like torching someone's house, beating them up, harassing them in some way. The laws are already there to deal with that. Knowing my ID number, you know, there are some companies, there are some utilities at low levels of the economic system that, for example, mobile phone providers, that will simply ask you your ID number and treat it like a password. And that's quite irresponsible. but they make a commercial judgment that they will compensate the person if there's any abuse, an impersonation by someone else trying to cut off their mobile phone or something. You know, they'll make them whole. And it's very rare that anyone abuses a number in that way. If you try to open a bank account, you don't need an ID number. You need to show them your ID card. It's a big difference. So you can't mess around with someone's money simply by knowing their ID number. You've got to actually show them the card. So, you know, it's, you know, as you know, I've got a fair bit of money and I've not noticed any of it missing because my ID number is public.
Okay. All right. Another point made by the administration is that I think Carrie Ladd said something like, why should journalists be treated differently? According to the new legislation, if you have a good reason to look for this information, you can access it, and that includes shareholders of a company and public officers or public bodies, including law enforcement agencies, trustees in bankruptcy, liquidators, inspectors under the trustee ordinance, the CEO and anti-money laundering and counter-terrorist financing ordinance, etc. With the principle that, you know, if you have a good reason, a good legal reason to be doing this, you are allowed to do it. But if you're just a nosy journalist, well, you can't.
Yeah, it narrows it down very considerably. What if you're a sponsor of an IPO and you want to do your due diligence and check whether the director's being fully forthcoming with you about his past failures and business problems? You need to be able to do your own homework on this with or without his consent.
But for sure, David, on that regard, I think, you know, if you're a sponsor of the IPO, you should have, you know, an ID copy of that director who will be a listed company director, right?
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily get you the information that you need. You need to be able to search a lot of registers here and overseas. And you need the full number. To do that. So, and also there are sort of practical issues. How do you prove to the registry, if you're a shareholder of a company, that you are the person on that register who is trying to search for the directors? I mean, what do you have to do then? You're going to have to set up another system to prove your identity to the register before you can do a search. So it's a whole new level of complexity and charging going to be involved. Rather than just a simple, open and transparent approach so that anyone who is either an indirect shareholder or a potential shareholder can do the same search. So, you know, it's not enough. The government last night put out a late-night press release trying to answer my article yesterday. I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it was completely misleading again. Because they said, oh, well, we've looked at all the current directors of current companies, and we've looked at whether they're, how many matches there are based on full names in English and or Chinese. Well, you know, some directors use variations of their Chinese name, slightly different characters, or don't put a Chinese name in at all in the Chinese character field. And others miss out names, so you know, as a person without a Chinese name, I could still put in David Webb, DM Webb, D Michael Webb, and still get a company registered. You need to be able to use unique identity numbers to search, and not just names that match with many people.
So, David, how did the overseas registries overcome this issue? Or is this an issue? The chief executive said, you know, this amounts to weaponization of personal data and information.
No, it's not. That's just so emotive and fake news. I mean, look, this is a chief executive who says she doesn't want fake news. And yet if you mask information, you're more likely to get mistaken identities and reports that misidentify people as directors when they're not. And fake news coming out of that. I mean, it's really ironic. You know, 2 years ago, she on her own passed emergency regulations to require people to remove their masks in public assemblies, so that they could be identifiable to deter crime, purportedly. Now, you can debate whether that was the effect, but, she wanted to unmask people, and now she's allowing directors to mask themselves up in the registry, which will incentivize crimes of fraud and corruption and money laundering and so on. rather than go for transparency. Let's have transparency everywhere. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. And take the masks off the ID numbers.
Okay, I'm just looking at the that statement. Thank you very much indeed that you mentioned. Yeah, so it does engage directly with your study. I mean, it's basically, among the other things, it says is that you did your study wrong, that you were working on the assumption that any three numbers from the
I was only using the three numbers which are currently redacted when you search the registry. I didn't selectively pick different three numbers on each masking. Currently, if you search the registry, then you get.
But they're going to be. They will be redacting. Yeah. They will be showing you the first three numbers.
Yeah. So currently, they mask the letter. Sorry, they mask the third, fourth, and fifth numerals out of six numerals. Okay. And the government says in future they're going to mask the fourth, fifth, and sixth numerals, right? That doesn't make a difference because
The first three.
They're going to show the first three.
Yes, sorry, yes, yes.
And they're going to mask the fourth, fifth, and sixth.
Yeah.
Okay, they're going to shift the masking. But that makes no difference, assuming you've used up all the numbers.
They say the results, therefore, are not directly comparable.
Well, they're not, they are, because in statistics and probability, you've still got 1,000 possible matches if you mask out three numbers. Okay, and assuming you've used the whole space of numbers, which they have for many of the letters, A, B, C, D, E, they ran out a long time ago. In fact, they're going to be running out of single letter combinations quite soon. In about 10 years' time, they might have to use routinely two letter combinations at the beginning. So which ones they choose to mask out as a policy in the registry won't make a difference to the problem. And the second thing is that they did their search wrong. I did mine right. Because if you are interested in the background of a person, you don't just want to know their current directorships of current companies. You want to know their former directorships of current companies and their former directorships of dissolved companies. You want to know if this person has left a trail of problems behind, walking away from creditors, not paying wages, on insolvency, leaving it to the public funds to compensate employees, and then setting up another restaurant next door or even in the same premises with a new company and so on. So, you know, there's, you need the whole history.
Yeah,
now, currently there are 3 million total companies, of which 1.4 million are still alive. So that's quite a large number. And I just don't think they've done their search properly. I have no confidence in their IT people. If you look at the website, it was designed in 1999. And I was able to access the full ID numbers simply by looking at the source code, because although they think they've masked them, they haven't. I mean,
David,
it's just comical, yes.
You hacked into it. And
no, I didn't hack it. I just pressed Control U, by the way, in your browser, and then you can look at the underlying code. And it's got all sorts of interesting comments in it, and full ID numbers of the numbers that appear to be masked when you look at the.
So you can see all the.
Yes, it's that bad.
Well, they haven't. Yeah, all right.
So I don't think they know how to do a proper SQL or MySQL database query. I'd be happy to help them if they provide the data.
Okay. One thing is that the government has linked this sort of searching of companies' details to journalist behavior, but you actually highlighted the fact that the financial companies and the finance sector actually does these searches all the time in due diligence.
Yeah.
Now, have you heard of them voicing their concern?
Well, they're a shy lot, aren't they? Because they're regulated. They don't like the possibility of regulators coming back at them or the government through the regulators. Everyone's keeping their heads down these days, Ada. That's why I'm the only one on your show this morning talking about this. I couldn't, even the government didn't send anyone to respond, and I'm sure you would have invited them. They are going to be unhappy. There's already been statements from, I believe, the Foreign Correspondents Club and the Hong Kong Journalists Association about this, and many articles written already about this.
FT, Bloomberg, and so on.
Yes. It's attracting international attention, as it did last time. And, you know, if they get away with this, they will also be doing the same thing with land registry and other registries, which journalists have used in the past to piece together the property holdings, undisclosed in some cases, of Hong Kong officials, in, you know, land in the new territories near development areas, for example. I can think of one senior official who had that issue through his spouse, or used to, and so on. So, you know, this is a thin end of the wedge, and it's part of a general crackdown on the public's right to know. And you know, Hong Kong is, you know, we're hearing, despite all the recent changes, stroke closing of loopholes, stroke improvements, according to your taste, that Hong Kong is still a free market with freedom of information and so forth. Well, let's see that. Let's see the freedom of information. Before Carrie Lam took office, she committed to supporting a freedom of information law, and we still don't have one. It's not even on the drawing board. She actually went to the Journalists Association and signed a pledge on that, I believe, and also an archives law so that we can later on see how government officials have been working on these
All
things.
All right. Well, I mean, in that statement that you mentioned that was issued last night, half past 11 last night, they work late hours, don't they?
Well, so did I.
Sure. They did say... in the last paragraph does say isn't there some hope there? It says, in the meantime, taking into account comments from members of the LegCo panel on financial affairs, we will look into the possibility of providing additional information for searches to identify directors concerned in the rare circumstances of different directors having identical partial identification numbers as well as Chinese and or English full name without compromising the principle of protecting the full IDN of and the full identification number of directors for the protection of personal privacy. So if the situation that you've described does arise, then they would sort it out.
Then it's a case by case basis.
Well, that's ridiculous. We just need an online. Just open the database, put it online like the UK has. You can search it. They've got an API for other people to search it, and tear down the paywall. You know, it really shouldn't be difficult. Publish all the ID numbers. I don't care about the addresses. So if you want to strike a balance, that's the place to go. Allow correspondence addresses. But constantly we hear this phrase of the government striking a balance. And it's usually striking a balance between doing the right thing and the wrong thing. And that's not good enough. We want to do the right thing here.
All right. One more comment from Alan of Lama, who says, Backchat. So the government asserts that they will keep company information secret because of doxing. The only people I've ever heard of who were attacked or harassed after their details were made public are pro-democracy supporters. And it seems very likely that the information was released by or with the blessing of the government. That's from Alan of Lama. David Webb, in the meantime, many thanks for joining us. Congratulations on your recent appointment. You were put on
Reappointed to the Takeovers panel after 20 years, yes.
Good.
Still fighting.
Yeah, still fighting, and good to see you looking well. David Webb there, editor of website.com, a shareholder activist. A few more comments just on our first topic this morning, talking about tensions across the Taiwan Strait, as Bowen puts it. In an email, he says, from a psychological and strategic standpoint, the mainland ought to have remained on a high alert level as regards Taiwan from 2000. Ye Chen Shui-bian was elected president, kicking off finally the process of having two equally credible political parties capable of forming a government. If democracy is allowed to take root and mature, obviously unification could become much more complicated and difficult. Fast forward 21 years, and now we have the U.S. Admiral John Aquilino, nominated to be commander of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, telling the Senate Armed Services Committee this March that although the outgoing commander, Philip Davidson, had said China could attack Taiwan as soon as 6 years from now, quote, my opinion is that this problem is much closer to us than most think, and we have to take this on, unquote. Admiral Aquilino did not go so far as Senator Tom Cotton, who said Beijing could opt to attack Taiwan as early as next year, presumably after hosting the Winter Olympics in February 2022, just as how Russia invaded and occupied Crimea in 2014, just days after it hosted the Winter Olympics. Asked by Tom Cotton why is it so important to Beijing that they annex Taiwan, Admiral Aquilino replied they view it as their number one priority. The rejuvenation of the Chinese Communist Party is at stake, very critical as they look at the problem, unquote. Obviously, being so close to Taiwan, we should all be on the qui vive. That's from Bowen. And Matthew says, when one steps above the historic and political hyperbole and hysteria and looks at the Taiwan situation, it's clear that for decades it's been an independent country with its own system and leadership that has no relationship to mainland China. When this is finally recognized and rectified, it will seem absurd that for so many years the world tiptoeingly appeased the CCP by pretending to believe it somehow belonged to them. And TC on Facebook says, mainland China's current interpretation of the so-called 92 consensus is a great example of decontextualization. The main principle of the 92 consensus is that both sides are free to interpret the meaning of one China. This is effectively a diplomatic way to agree to disagree. Neither side is supposed to force its interpretation on the other side. This means that the Republic of China can theoretically claim that it has sovereignty of mainland China. The original agreement has never been one country, two systems. That's from TC. Thank you very much indeed for that. Ada, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. Here's the weather before we go. Many fine, hot temperatures up to 30 degrees, 26 degrees at the moment. Relative humidity now 76%.